Hold, please.
Councilmember Cardoza?
Here.
Councilmember Christensen?
Here.
Council President Boobin Vanderhaar?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Here.
Mayor Stu?
Here. And we have Karen Hernandez here from United Methodist Church. If you will all stand and join me in the invocation, and then we'll do the Pledge of Allegiance.
Thank you, Mayor. Let us pray. Loving God, we give you thanks for this community where we are so blessed to live. We see growth and change all around us, and for many of us, we see excited blessings in that growth. But change is hard. And we pray for those who are struggling with changes of all kinds as they quickly unfold around us. We pray for our leaders here in this room, but also those unofficial ones who don't run for election and yet offer incredible leadership in our community. We pray for those who are called to serve as leaders at every level of government in our country and around the world. We ask you to guide those leaders and to guide us to be faithful followers, following those who are elected, but also following your will, God, that we might together build your kingdom here on earth. It's in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, that we pray. Amen.
Amen. If you join me to the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. The first item is the consent agenda. Is there anything we need to talk about on that or a motion to approve?
If nobody has anything, then I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve the consent agenda as presented. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Thank you. That motion is approved. Next is community reports and requests. We have the Project Impact STEM Academy presentation. Mr. Netto, the Interim Director of Education and Founder. Or whoever wants to, I don't care.
Thank you, Mayor Steer.
Thank you.
And council members, City CUNA. I really appreciate the opportunity to present to you our school Project Impact STEM Academy. So my name's Dan Netto. I'm from CUNA, but grew up here. Super excited to be back teaching and working here in CUNA. Last February, my wife, another teacher I worked with, Jasmine Martin, and I came together with the idea of forming a new high school in the city of CUNA. As we began our journey by holding public meetings in the CUNA library. As we began those meetings, we found from the public that there was a greater need for not just a high school, but a K-12 school, which was really surprised me because I don't teach in elementary school, so I wasn't sure how that was going to work. So with the help of the community, Project Impact STEM Academy was designed to open its first year with kids with grades kindergarten through seventh. We're going to skip eighth grade for the first year, go to ninth grade, and by the year 2021, we'll have expanded to grades K-12, serving approximately 429 students in the CUNA area. To join some of the members of our founding and governing board, and I'd like to recognize them at the time if they could please stand. And the reason I wanted to recognize them is their tremendous amount of work that it takes to put together a school. We were advised by the state that it takes usually 2 years to completely go through the whole process of building a charter school. We began last January, at the end of January, and we were in front of the State Commission on December 14th, where our petition was passed. So from all of these people, it's a tremendous amount of work that was done. So ding, ding, sir. And go to the next one, please. All right. So my background in education has really been very short. My background was in the military, was in business, managing larger groups of people. So when I came into education, the world of education seemed really odd to me, to be honest. School, the things that I was teaching kids, I teach science, things I was teaching kids wasn't what really I was doing when I worked outside of school. And I really felt that that education needed to be a little bit different and change. And ever since I started teaching, I wanted to make the change in that. And that's what really led to the school. As Benjamin Franklin said, tell me and I'll forget, show me and I may remember, involve me and I learn. I know the less I talk to my students, the more they actually learn, because they are the ones doing the learning and the work. So our mission, Project Impact STEM Academy, will provide an engaging, adaptive learning environment through the use of personalized learning plans, intentionally integrated curriculum, mastery-based progression, and with authentic projects embedded in science, technology, engineering, and math. In this environment, students will gain confidence, practice failure until it's no longer intimidating, and become invested in lifelong pursuit of knowledge. So in our research on transformative education, found the work being done in STEM education matching more to my experiences in the workforce. Albert Einstein Distinguished Educator Fellow Emeritus and NASA STEM Endeavor Fellow Jonathan W. Gerlach states, as a nation, we need to begin approaching leaders. We need to examine how we are currently supporting the cultural change and stop focusing on just the individual content letters of STEM itself, which is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So being involved in STEM, I've been involved in STEM education in the state. I'm part of different committees with the state. I've worked with Angela Hemingway, who is a former teacher here in CUNA, Idaho at the high school, and she runs the Governor's Task Force, the STEM Action Center. And right now we're working on what does it take to become a STEM school, because there's lots of different definitions of STEM, not just the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So for us, STEM, the science part of STEM is building upon the process of asking questions, building hypotheses, and experimentation. Technology focuses on computational thinking and using technological tools available in the current society, along with the possibility of adding to and or building new technology. Next. Engineering, STEM education is engineering, which revolves around the design process, which emphasizes growth through failure, constructive criticism, and revision. And STEM education is mathematics, which is based on models and critical thinking in all areas of life, providing students with another language in which they may communicate their learning. So the next part here was a video that we showed. You're getting a condensed version of our presentation to the state. And it was a video showing of Apollo 13, one of the problems that they had to solve, when they recognized that the carbon dioxide scrubbing filters that were in one of the vehicles was not the same as what they had in the other vehicles. They needed to fit a round peg in a square hole. And I think that's very fitting for us as a school, because our students, one thing I really learned is, and seen with our kids, is that they're all, for the most part, being taught very similar. I bring them into a room, I would lecture to them, and they're all cookie cutter, trying to take all those round pegs and trying to cram them down the square holes, and it's very difficult for some students. Some students adapt very well to that model. But not all students. And our school is for those students that don't adapt well to that. So our learning model for PISA is K-12 is mastery and project-based learning. The leading project-based learning organization, the Buck Institute of Education, teaches the gold standard. PBL is focused on Common Core standards, so the key knowledge that we need to have, understanding, and success skills. So I've been to train with the Buck Institute, and one of the models that we use for the project-based learning is their gold standard of PBL. As such gold standards, projects always start with a challenging problem or question. PISA will focus on receiving these problems and questions from local, state, national, international partnerships, along with focusing on cross-curricular work. We want our school to be what you want us to solve, not just contrived problems that I come up with. This provides students with an authentic projects, which will have a broader audience than just their fellow classmates and teachers. Authenticity provides meaning and personal connection. Within this, students have the ability and opportunity to choose how they will approach the problem, or even have the opportunity to go out and find a problem that interests them to solve. We're looking for kids that are looking out for things that they're interested in, the world that they want to provide solutions for. Next. after the terrifying moment that the community told us they wanted a K-12, went back and did the research, and they were absolutely right. They were right on the nose. One of the things that we see when kids come into school in the upper levels, middle school, high school, that they're already kind of scared of math. They're already kind of scared of science. When our innate, it's part of us. We want to build. We want to understand things. And so getting kids younger is our focus for building these STEM careers and building these STEM jobs. Again, Jonathan W. Gerlach, I'll quote him, STEM culture cannot begin halfway through a student's career. By the time our students reach sixth grade, they have a conscious decision whether or not they'll be good at math and science. Majority of these students have potential for greatness. However, they were not engaged in authentic learning early enough in their education. The majority of STEM programs, initiatives, and resources begin with a focus on sixth grade and higher. We are missing the opportunity to expose students to STEM because we are missing all of the students who have already decided on their own that STEM isn't for them without truly understanding the possibilities. We're going to take these kids and we're going to teach them from young how to be designers, how to work, and how to solve problems. And it's going to be exciting. Our learning model, for the next slide, please. Under the direction of and with the support of the Director of Education, PISA teachers will collaborate together to create curriculum goals for their students that align with current state and common core standards. The K-12 program at PISA will allow students autonomy in their education, pursuits of interests, and also in choice of materials used to explore and express thoughts and knowledge. The most important thing to remember about teaching STEM to early learners is that they are perfectly adapted to learn STEM concepts and it is not difficult to teach STEM to young children. The secret is to tap into their natural and innate curiosity about the living world. By simply allowing them to investigate, by encouraging them to ask questions about the real world, you're already engaging children in STEM. How we will assess our students, we will do the test that's required of the state. We will make sure all our students will be learning from a curriculum that's very typical in schools. How they will be assessed, though, as well, isn't going to be just paper tests and essays and things like that. We'll also be doing public exposition, student portfolio work, and they'll be working through learning management systems that help them guide their own learning. Our learning environment, we're very excited about because this is going to be a typical classroom that we've all been used to. As a teacher is currently working in a project mastery-based high school, I know how important it is to have students have standards for working and moving around in the school. So it's not just a free-for-all, they get to do whatever they want. Marzano Research, a leading researcher in education, holds yearly-based mastery-based education workshops that I've been able to attend. One of the major pieces for students being effectively implement a project in mastery-based schools, having a clearly defined standard operating procedures or SOPs. When they walk in the door, they know what's expected of them, and they move forward with their work. There's always procedures for them to learn. Just as we focus on being transparent with our students for what we expect them to learn and do, we're also transparent with how the space is used, allowing students to the ability to learn how to self-manage after explicitly teaching these skills on how to use their space. It is an important life skills as students will eventually become adults in need of self-management skills. One thing I ask my students, if I want them to grow up to be trustworthy people, what do I need to do? And their answer was to me, I guess you need to trust us. Like, yes, I do. But here's the box you get to play in. If you go outside that box, then here's what will happen to you. So our evidence of our demand, on December 26th, enrollment was open for students who would like to go to PISA. As of yesterday, we have 111 students who have already applied. Families who applied come from CUNA, the community of CUNA. We have students from Nampa. We have families from Meridian, public and charter schools, as well as families who have been working at home with their own students doing homeschooling. There's a big desire for students to want to come to the school. Applications are going to continue to be accepted until when? March 26th, and are on April 4th, right? 3rd, sorry. It's going to be our lottery, which we will hold in the CUNA library. We just wanted to be able to come in front of the public, in front of you guys, and to be able to thank you so much for support that many of you have given. Richard Cardoza, Mayor Steer, have given us in support in building the school and advice that you've given us. We're continuing to work hard, and we're excited to bring the school to the community of CUNA. One of the things when we got our permission, our acceptance, is we walked around and we came to the city hall and we thanked our thank people, went around to the community and thanked people for helping us. And it is so exciting to be able to be a part of something new that's coming to CUNA. And we just wanted to say thank you. Have any questions?
Good. Thank you. Any questions? I would just like to comment. I do appreciate all the work that you put into this. It's, you know, a lot of times these things come up, you hear about them for a little bit, and then they go away, and then they come back, and then they go away. This one's been pretty steady and constant, and I know how much work you've put into it. So congratulations to all of you, and I appreciate what you're doing.
Yeah. Oh, just thanks for all your work. I'm really excited about it. I think it's a really cool opportunity for CUNA to have. So I thank all of you for all your hard work.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Dan, before you leave, what is the ratio of teachers to students in your class?
So the teacher ratio students, because it kind of depends based upon the different grades that we have, it'll be about 30 to a little bit less than teacher to student. One thing unique about us, as kids are learning, they're actually learning at the level that they are at. So a teacher isn't necessarily going to have their whole kindergarten class and that's all they see for a whole year. They'll be working with students who have what working level that they're at. So if a student is reading at a second grade level, that's where they're going to be working. If a student is, so the ratio gets a little bit different when it comes out, but it would be a little bit less than 30 to 1.
Okay. Thank you, Dan.
Yeah,
real quick, Dan, sorry. Mm-hmm. Where can people go to find out the application process?
That's a good question, So our website is PISTEM, so PISTEM.org. And there's applications on there. We have paper applications. You can also contact us through info@PISTEM.org. But the process is also placed on the website to explain how to apply.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Next, we have the CUNA Rural Fire District Impact Fee Report. Ann Westcott from Galena Consulting.
Mayor, Council Members, I'm Ann Westcott with Galena Consulting. Thanks so much for letting us have an opportunity to speak with you tonight. I know impact fees are just about the most glamorous subject you ever get to interact with. Luckily, I know you're all up to date. You have Parks impact fees. You've been through the process recently, so we don't need to do a whole lot of education. We have two of our commissioners tonight here, Chief Palmer and Robin, who really runs the place, actually. just a little bit of background. I've been doing impact fee work in Idaho and the western states for about 15 years, and I've done quite a lot of the impact fee studies in southern Idaho. And most of the cities is the work that I've been doing. The fire districts, parks districts didn't really take advantage of this for a long time because the state law didn't allow them to. About 8 years ago, the law did change and say that fire districts could collect impact fees, but that was right in the middle of a recession, and people weren't that interested in bringing this subject up. So now that the recession seems to be turning into another growth cycle, all of a sudden, all of my fire districts are breaking out because there's all these people and a need for a station and an apparatus, and that stuff is expensive. And we come to ask these questions about who should pay for growth, whether existing residents should pay for the cost of growth or whether those bringing growth to a community should. So we're here before you today. We'll go ahead and change. Yes, Idaho State statute does allow fire impact fees now for fire districts. The catch is because any impact fee is paid at the point of building permit, fire districts don't collect the building permit. You guys have all the power. So basically, they are here tonight begging for your support because they need you to take the money and give it to them. That's actually all we're here to do is just ask you to help us with that. But I'll go through a little bit of this. So what would need to happen legally is the fire district and the city of CUNA would enter into an intergovernmental agreement that essentially would say you've seen their impact fee study, you agree that it complies with state statute, you are willing, in the same way that the City of Boise and the City of Kuhn already do with ACHD, to collect those fees on the district's behalf and then remit them to the district at whatever schedule and for whatever administrative fee you want to charge them. Sorry, I told you about that.
I think we're limited on that a little bit, though.
The intergovernmental fee is not in statute. The administrative fee for managing it is, but yeah, I think 2% is probably the number we're looking at. But the good news is, unlike your own impact fee program, the city is not responsible at all for monitoring the impact fee, for keeping the accounts. The fire district would continue with their own advisory committee and would be doing all the annual auditing that's required, although I would expect that they would, of course, come and give you an annual report as requested. Next one. So you are all up to date, but we'll just remind anyone else who's here, the impact fees are collected only for new development projects. So if you're expanding your house, building a garage, that's not going to incur an impact fee. It's a new house being built. It's a new office building or retail space. And those fees are calculated to cover a proportionate share. That's really the important case law piece here, is that we can't just say everything else that we need to build or buy is the responsibility of growth. My job is to make sure that we can connect the specific amount with the amount of growth that's coming so that new development is paying its share and the general taxpayers are paying theirs. Next. So we know that there are three different kinds of capital spending. One is to repair and replace. So if the fire station has a leaky roof, that is not growth's problem. That's the taxpayer's problem, and the taxpayers pay for that through their tax revenues. In the bottom here, expansion, if we need a new station, and the only reason we need a new station is because the community has grown outside of its original boundaries, then that station is obviously due to growth. Betterment of facilities is sometimes a half-and-half situation. So it might be running a deficiency in one area. I'll have a capital project that's partly growth-related, partly not, and you'll see that in the math. Okay? And speaking of math, impact fees are very, very easy, even if you haven't gone to a STEM school, I think.
I was going to say, we need the STEM people back.
We need some STEM people here, but I do not have that background, and I can do this math. Because this math is just third grade division. You take the numerator, which is how much stuff you need to build or buy in order to keep the level of service constant. And that's really important, is the whole reason for impact fees is to be able to pay for infrastructure that's necessitated by growth in order to keep that level of service from decreasing. Can't make it better. But if the fire department, the district is responding between 4 and 6 minutes to calls, and you double in size, and now it's same-day service or 20 minutes to respond, you probably don't want that. So that's what we're trying to connect to. So we take that numerator and we divide it by who's coming, the number of new households, the number of non-residential square footage, and that's your full cost recovery impact fee. You can't charge any more than that. Next one. So I do want to take a moment to thank the City of Kuna and to Ms. Hall's staff, because they were wonderful in helping me. It was also really wonderful of you all to go through your comp plan process so recently, because your data is impactful. I did, obviously the district, the fire district is larger than the City of Kuna, and so it has larger projections, but we worked with Compass to specifically get these put together. Probably can't read this up here, but you do have it in the report that was submitted to you. Population of the Kuna district is about 25,000 people. No, go back. It's okay. You want me to remember all of that? About 7,700 households and about 750,000 non-residential square footage. And when we look at the population growth projections, traffic modeling, and all of the subdivisions that are already in play in your city, it's not news to you that you're one of the fastest growing communities. So if we look 10 years out, we are anticipating a little over 17,000 new people within the district, which is slightly larger than the city itself. That's about 5,400 new households and another 1.2 million square feet. We'll talk a minute about where we think that 1.2 million square feet are coming from. That breaks down to about 90% residential, 10% non-residential, which I think gut check seems about right. Okay, next one. So I sat down with the chief and the commission, and first I wanted to know, what is it like in your community now? And the chief said, well, we can get to 90% of our calls in 4 to 6 minutes, depending on ambulance or fire protection. And I said, chief, what kind of stuff do you have in your inventory now to be able to do that? Well, we have one fully staffed station, and then the second station that's unstaffed. And then we have all this apparatus, our engines, our water tenders, brush trucks, and ambulances, and some equipment that has a 10-year life. And so the district right now owns about $7.2 million worth of stuff. Next slide. And if I take that $7.2 million worth of stuff and I divide it by everyone who already lives here, or lives in the district, everyone owns $886 worth of stuff. Good for you all, $886. So that's what, one tire on an engine? Maybe not even that, but some stuff. The $886 is important to keep in mind because we don't want to be charging growth more than that amount. That math just doesn't work out. But it's going to be interesting to see if the number we come out with, if it's less than that, elected officials often feel more comfortable assessing the next person in the community, their share. Now we can go on. All right, so I say, chief, we're going to look at a map of the district, and we know where all of these plats and new subdivisions are going. We know that retail will follow that at your major arterials. Are you going to be able to provide that 4 to 6 minute response with this growth pattern? And you said, no. And so I said, all right, so what's the plan? Where are we going to need a new station? Of course, we can't exactly guess where the growth is going to be and how fast it's going to come, but CUNA has better comp planning than most communities I work with, and you actually do seem to know. So that is helpful. Station 2 is not the existing Station 2, but Station 2 is the station that's being looked at in the northwest corner of the district, bordering on Meridian. Yes. So, yes, it needs a new station that's in the northwest section to be able to provide that same level of service as the community grows. That station is worth about $3.2 million, and 100% of that is growth-related. Because I asked the chief, if no one came to CUNA after today, if the doors were closed, would you need to build another station? No. The only reason we need another station is because growth is going into that area. The next line, we also need to remodel and expand Station 1. That's one of those half and half. So part of the reason they need to expand is they just don't have the right configuration of space and they need training facilities. That's a deficiency, so taxpayers will pay for that part. But they also need to expand and to be able to provide more bay space for more apparatus and, I believe, dorm space. Right? I have 10 fire districts right now and I'm just trying to keep them separated night by night. So that's 50-50. So we said, you know, taxpayers will pay half of that. Impact fee revenue can pay the other half. And then we go into vehicles. And vehicles are a little sticky. State statute does not speak to whether or not apparatus should be included in impact fees. In every other state that I work in, if they are not to be included, it specifically prohibits them. Most states say it's allowed. Idaho says nothing. Now, the way I work, if it says nothing, you do it and wait until someone questions you. But the district's attorney, Mr. Gigray, who I greatly admire, and the rest of the Idaho Fire Commissioners have decided to go to the legislature this year and ask for a specific opinion on whether or not we're including apparatus. Now, if I look at legislative intent, you can't fight fires with a station. It's a shed if there's nothing in it, but that's only my part of the argument. So for today, we've written the impact fee program hoping that apparatus will be included. And if that decision comes out differently in this session, then this will need to be revised. But you see the ladder truck for Station 2. Now, the district doesn't have a ladder truck right now, but the kind of growth that is coming to CUNA is somewhat requiring, with different heights, that we have different kind of equipment. Because we don't have one now, that's another one of those 50-50. Growth play half. Existing taxpayers will pay the other half. Then we have a bunch of infrastructure that we need to replace that's just old. But that's not growth's problem, right? That's existing district taxpayers. So I like to put these up on our capital improvement program because I know as elected officials, whether council members or commissioners, it helps to know how bad the outlook is for 10 years, right? And I'll say, you need to come up with $8 million. If you look at the middle column, that's how much stuff the district needs to build or buy in the next 10 years. And then I say, and $4.2 million of that is impact fee eligible. Well, who's going to pay the other $3.9 million? The district taxpayers. So, going to the next slide. If we agree that $4.2 million worth of stations and apparatus need to be acquired in order to continue this 4 to 6 minute response, we divide it by the number of households, 5,400, that are coming, and the number of non-residential square footage. That impact fee per household would be $701.35 per non-residential square foot. So that is as complicated as the math is. It's the same as your parks fee methodology. Next slide. Last slide here. So the advisory committee, which I really like to thank. We had a really generative discussion, a lot of members of the development and commercial community here in CUNA who really talked through the policy issues that happen. The BAF is the easy part, it's the policy issues that are difficult. And some of those issues were, well, we know that people want to live here. There's clearly no shortage. There's a new sign every time I drive out here. There's no shortage of residential demand. But every community needs that balance, right, of non-residential as well. And we know statistically that non-residential retail follows rooftops, but how fast will that happen? And CUNA's in an interesting situation in that you border one of the other fastest growing communities. So you know that sometimes you lose out on retail opportunities because they can just site themselves kind of in between the two. So we talked a lot about whether or not, you know, the first question is, can we exempt non-residential from paying impact fees? No, that's discriminatory. You can't just pick a land use that you want. Now, in parks, you can, because we have some statistical data about parks are for people, not for businesses. So the next question was, well, what if we pick up certain developments that we liked? Could we exempt them from the impact fees? Or could we cut the fee in half? No, you can't pick out certain people that you like because that's also discriminatory. And you also don't want to get into the trouble that some not-to-be-named communities in the two-county area have done where they just adopt half of what the fee is supposed to be and not make up the rest of it. If you want an impact fee, they wanted an impact fee that was lower than $701. We can make that math happen. But if they need to buy the whole station, then we need to make sure that they can pay the difference. So when we all realize that they can't pay the difference, that's why we're looking at impact fees. The compromise that we came to, and it's something that I'm still working through with the attorney, is the statute and most statutes do allow you to exempt specific developments either for affordable housing or for what's called broad public impact. Again, not defined in the statute. But we do believe that we could set up a protocol by which if a development were coming to the community and could prove to the district and the council that this development would have such a strong net impact after all of the new expenditures it was going to cost you, because I don't ever like to hear how much property tax you're going to bring in. I want to know minus what it's going to cost to serve you. But the city and the district could choose to pay their fee for them. So you're not going to waive the fee, but you could decide that it's such an important economic development initiative for you in the same way that the county waives property tax, or defers it. So this is an option, and it's one that the commission, that the advisory committee recommended to the commission, and the commission asked me to keep working on. So that's where we are with the district's impact fee program. Stand for any questions that you have.
Okay. Questions?
No one is awake.
The report was really thorough, so I don't think I have anything at this point.
Well, I appreciate all the work on this. This is, I'm sure the fire district knows, this is something that I've been wanting to get in place for a while because I see the need and I go out and spend $600,000 on a pumper, and that's just what they cost anymore. It's pretty difficult. I really am a believer that new growth should pay for itself, and so this is one way to help ensure that happens. So I appreciate all the work on it. Do you know about when you will want to put together an agreement with the city?
That's a good point. The district could put it together an agreement with you immediately if the city is ready to go ahead. In Star, for example, one of the other ones that's happening at the same time, the city of Star is supportive but doesn't want to do it until they're sure that the county is also going to participate. 5 years ago, it was an absolute no. Neither Ada nor Canyon County were interested in participating. There's a little change in the membership in Canyon County. Two of them were in the city of Nampa, worked with me on impact fees. I've had good conversations with the commissioners in Ada County. I feel like we have an environment now where the counties will collect on the district's behalf. So if the city of CUNA is comfortable just going ahead, we're ready to go ahead. If you want to wait until we have conversations with the counties, those should be happening in the next 60 days.
I guess for me, and weigh in heavily what council thinks on this, but I think that most of the development comes from people that are annexing into the city, so I think that's where a very large majority of that growth comes from, so I'm pretty confident that the county will accept that and go along with it, but that wouldn't be a deal breaker for me. So.
You're ready to go, Mayor. I'm hearing that.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Joe in terms of timing. I can't recall. For the provision of services alone, I think pretty much everybody's annexing. So I don't see a reason to wait. I mean, it seems like the longer we wait, the more
money you lose.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been going at this for, what, a year and a half with the parks on our side of it. So get the ball rolling on your side, for sure.
And I have a question just for my knowledge sakes when it comes to numbers. When we talk about like an unstaffed station and things like that, is that something that obviously the funds for that potentially are going to impact the fire station, or are we just going to maintain that asset, hold on to funds of $1.4 million?
I don't know how public that is, but that is in the middle of it. The unstaffed station is in the middle of a land swap right now.
Okay.
So that station 2 that you saw in the inventory will no longer be around, and that money will be put in hold for a station 3 that will be in the southeast portion of the district, but probably not within the 10-year horizon.
Okay.
If you start growing even faster than you are now, that station 3 could be brought back into the CIP. But essentially, we've gotten rid of station 2, building a new 2 up in the northwest. Money that we got from the sale of the unstaffed 2 would become a down payment on 3. Does that make sense?
Oh, that does.
Oh, good.
That makes sense. one more question just regarding the replacement of all the engines, because I see that you want to replace all 7 engines in the next 10 years. Is that how I read that? Replace 2, and 3? When we start looking at the years of those engines, is that something that is you guys are going to have to, you're just going to look at the realistic aspect of that when you talk about you've got a 2016 ambulance, 2015 Pierce engine, because those are just fees that are placed on current residents or
right, exactly.
of engines so that are fairly brand new.
That's based on the best practices for those kinds of units. Depends on how many runs you make, depends on the kind of uses that you have. I'm quite confident that the district would not choose to replace something prior to its time. They may have some lease-to-own type agreements as well. So that 16 is right under the cut of the 10-year. It does need to last at least 10 years. I could not totally speak to whether or not the district could afford to replace all of the equipment as we've laid out. That CIP was more to guide them toward best practices replacement.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah, and then I can,
unless you'd like to buy one.
I can tell you in the past, the NFPA sets up a standard for how you determine when an engine has reached its life expectancy, and CUNA Fire has for many years gone well beyond what that limit is supposed to be. And
sometimes they sell them to other less fortunate districts. Marching, I don't know.
Okay, well, thank you.
Mayor?
Yes.
How would apartments be addressed, as residential or commercial?
As residential. So every apartment is its own residential unit.
Each unit.
Apartments the same as a house.
Okay.
And the reason we do that and don't break it out by square footage is we don't have any way of knowing if there are, you know, eight people in an apartment and two people in a house. Either way, the fire department's going to respond to that address. So that's, we just consider them all, regardless of the size of the housing unit, it is one unit.
Okay. If the acquisition right now of ownership is 886, why are you going 701 instead of 886?
Really good question. So that goes back to just doing the actual math of what they own and what it costs right now divided by who's here. And then the impact fee, in some states you're allowed just to figure out how much everyone owns and charge the next guy the same 886. And Idaho says, no, we want you to actually do a long range, a 10-year capital plan, and divide it by who you know is really coming. And the reason that 701 is a little bit less than the other number is because you already have a station one that is pretty large, and you have this station two that's unstaffed, but it's still worth something. So in a sense, the people in CUNA already have built extra capacity, and that's why they own slightly more per residential unit than we need new growth to pay. I'm very comfortable with the spread of those two numbers. It's not unusual at all, particularly in fire. If it were $200 to $800, we would have made some mistakes. And we definitely don't want it to be much more than 886. I also can double check looking at the 10 studies that I'm doing for districts around the two county area. Almost all the districts are coming in at around $700. And we don't expect them to be exactly the same because everyone has different, they might need more stations than others. But the fact that they're coming in makes me really feel confident that we have a strong relationship between a household and the amount of infrastructure that it needs. Does that help?
My last question is, I would think a fire engine, an ambulance, a square footage of a fire station would cost the same regardless of whether it's a rural or a city fire. Why is the city of Meridian, Caldwell, and Boise all at 500 and CUNA's looking at 7?
Excellent.
If the cost is consistent?
You're right. The costs are consistent. What's not consistent is the amount of growth. So even though you, CUNA, are growing faster by a percentage than Boise is growing, Boise can spread out its costs over more people. They still have more people. If the city of Boise is 250,000 and they grow by 1%, that still is a lot of people compared to a community as small as CUNA growing by 7%, for example. The city of Boise, Nampa, and Caldwell have a lot of infrastructure that's already in place. Nampa is a good example. Their entire fire administration came through a bonded, that public safety complex. So that was already paid for from another revenue source, and it kind of messes up the numbers in that way. And I happen to know that Nampa's are way too low, and they are going to be going back up, and I believe that Boise's will be going back up in their next update because of the cost of construction. It's another example. Boise's were done 3 or 4 years ago based on construction costs then. We were using about $200 a square foot. Bids that are coming in on the newest stations in the valley are at $350 a square foot.
Okay.
So that would explain that difference. We do want them to be the same as the other districts. I think that's important, but you're right, it is slightly higher than the other cities.
If we're a 4 right now on ISO, what do they think it'll drop to with a new fire station? Because once you get out of town, you jump to a 7.
The important part is the ladder truck. So that ladder truck is going to be the best investment you make in your ISO rating. We never know what it will do until they actually come to rate. But having that ladder truck and then the two stations that are at different areas of the district can only help the ISO rating become more of an urban rating than having so much of a rural rating outside of it, which is good for residents who have to pay insurance premium.
But most rating is based on 1,000 feet from fire hydrant, with residential being spread out and no commercial. Do you think it's going to change ISO that much from a 4 down to a 3?
They don't really look at distance so much. Travel time is what you have available in equipment, personnel, training. Those are the big factors.
Chief, could you come to the mic, please?
5 miles from a fire station. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Chief, if you would just state your name for the record, and thank you.
Terry Palmer, Fire Chief, Fire District. So if you go over 5 miles, then they view it as you have essentially no protection. So you're going to get a class 10. If you're over 1,000 feet, but within 5 miles, 1,000 feet of a fire hydrant, but within 5 miles of a fire station, that's where you get into the grading of usually anywhere between a 6 to a 9, potentially. It's within 1,000 feet of a fire hydrant, and you're inside 5 miles of a fire station, then you're looking at a class 4. The thing that can drop that is equipment, the apparatus that has that equipment, the number of people that you have, the training, and then the water system. The fire department portion of it, which is the people, the equipment, and the training, is worth 50%. The water system is worth 30%, and then, or I'm sorry, 40%, and then the dispatching is worth 10. So that's where the points are at.
Chief, number two station won't be manned. Or will it be a manned full-time?
Okay, so if we're talking about the station that we're looking at eventually in the northwest, that would be a staff station.
It would, okay.
Yes. The station that's out east, we're going to reestablish that station, and it will be unmanned, but it will have people that can respond to the station to take equipment. At some point, that also will be likely a staff station. But as Ann's mentioned, it's totally based on growth and the need to maintain service levels that will drive that as to when that change would happen.
The other station is Desert View.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you had sold that at public auction.
We did. We sold that. But we still are looking for property out there to reestablish a station.
Okay.
The problem with the station that was there was apparatus has grown. The station didn't. So we don't have any equipment that will fit in that station.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you, Mayor.
Yeah. Anything further? Is there anything else you wanted to add to that? Okay. Let us know certainly when you're ready to put something together. And we'll also be, Richard is also willing to help work on that. Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you. All right. The next item on the agenda is a public hearing. This is a public hearing that was tabled from January 2nd, 2018, and consideration to approve 17-11-S subdivision for Merino Cove subdivision. This is a public hearing. We will have 10 minutes for presentation, and then anyone who wishes to speak on that and address the council can have 3 minutes for that, and then we'll offer 5 minutes for rebuttals. Is there anyone who wishes to testify in this case who didn't get a chance to sign up? Okay, thank you very much. Troy, I have your name listed. Are you the one that's presenting on this?
I'm sorry. I was being interrupted by the city attorney. What was the question?
Your name was listed. I just wondered if you were the one that was
okay.
Presenting.
Chuck Christensen is here. He's with Quadrant Consulting. He's got a few words to say. And then.
Okay, I need to have people sign up if they're going to speak.
Mr. Mayor, sorry. My name is Chuck Christensen, members of the council. I work for Quadrant Consulting. We're representing Burial Construction and the design and development of this little subdivision in CUNA. It's on the north side of Hubbard Road, east of Meridian Road, right next to the Patagonia subdivision. And I won't go over the information that's already contained in the staff report. It's the subdivision is 25 acres. It's accessed via an extension of an existing road in Patagonia called Merino Street, I think. Our services, our sewer and water are being taken off of that extension. We've worked with the staff on conditions and concerns that they had and are comfortable with everything we've came up with. The only thing we would like to discuss tonight is the installation of an 18-inch sewer trunk main that staff is recommending that we install in Hubbard Road. So the connection point for that main is about 500 feet west of our property in Hubbard Road. So as part of the city of CUNA's long-term sewer plan, they want that 18-inch main extended from Patagonia through the Patagonia subdivision on Hubbard Road again, and then across the front of our subdivision. We don't tie into that main. We won't tie into that. We won't use it. Obviously, an 18-inch main is three or four times the capacity that a 25-lot subdivision is required. And we're happy to participate in some of the costs, but we think it's unreasonable that this 25-lot subdivision should bear the entire cost of that whole main, especially when the benefit of that main will go to the people on the south side of Hubbard Road, which has not yet been developed, as well as the people further to the east. So we would just like the council to at least consider making that main line, that trunk line extension, eligible for reimbursement, at least some portion of it. Other than that, I don't really have anything else to say. Do I need to still sign this, Mr. Mayor?
Yes, please. Then we can keep your signature on record forever.
Okay.
So on the 18-inch main line, then, are you you talked about the reimbursement, or are you talking about entire reimbursement for, or you talking about you don't want to have to put it in?
Well, we're willing to put it in.
Okay.
We just think it should be eligible, if not entirely, at least a portion of it should be eligible for reimbursement.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you for that clarification. Did anyone have any questions for
Mayor? Wouldn't there be latecomers fee on that 18-inch above?
Mayor and Council, this just got brought to our attention about 4 o'clock that this was coming up, so we haven't had a real good chance to vet this yet. Richard and I still need to have some more conversations on it. There is a chance that a piece of it will be, or some of it will be, eligible for reimbursement. We just haven't really had a chance to sit down and actually go over this yet, just because of the – we tried to get them an answer as fast as we could, and we just need a little bit more time to vet that out. But it does look like, Richard and I just talked a second ago, that a portion of it will be eligible for reimbursement.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Any other further questions?
Just one added question to that. The 18-inch sewer line, is that a requirement? Is that required of this neighborhood then, or is this something they want to do as a favor?
No, it's required by the master plan.
Okay.
The master plan says that you must bring to and through your property and whatever line that calls out for, and this particular one is an 18-inch line.
Thank you.
And we're trying to keep those standards in that fashion so that we don't end up digging holes and putting pipes by pipes. We try to do that all at once so that we don't impact the roadways and whatever from there. So
we would have to make an exception to this subdivision then if we went and okay it.
No, I think that would be entirely, and maybe Richard will want to answer to this, but I would think it would be entirely on what the reimbursement agreement is and whether or not they would agree to the reimbursement agreement. I don't think that's something that would actually hold up this decision tonight.
Correct. Council Member Cardoza, for the record, Richard Roach, the ordinance allows for reimbursement. We just need to run through that to determine the amount. There's some variables in here that are a little bit different, so we need to put those in and the ordinance, but there's a likelihood that there will be a reimbursement under our ordinance. And it wouldn't hold up today's decision.
Okay. It has no matter to this decision tonight as to the 18-inch.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. This is a public hearing. I didn't have anyone sign in on the sheet to testify. Is there anyone who wishes to testify in this manner here tonight? Okay. Well, as a matter of procedure, I need to open the public hearing. So we'll go ahead and open the public hearing. And I'll ask one more time, is there anyone who wishes to testify in this matter? Seeing none.
I move we close the public hearing.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to close the public hearing. Any further discussion? All those in, yes? Oh, well, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. For the record, Troy Behunin, I'm actually standing in for Trevor Kestner. Before he left the city to go work on different adventures, he actually was working on this, and he passed this off to me. So I'll make it short. Trevor said that Chuck Christensen and Frank Varielle, they've worked very closely hand-in-hand with him and with staff's recommendations. Just a few things to highlight. I'm sure it was just a slip of the tongue. This project actually is not 25 acres. Rather, it's 25 buildable lots. It's actually a 6.8-acre site. It is located where he was talking about, right next to Patagonia on Hubbard Road. Just a couple of things of note real quick. The Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend for approval on this later in 2017. And Trevor did want me to make sure that it was mentioned. And I don't know what the resolution was on this, so I feel horrible that I don't know. But the ACHD recommendations for Hubbard Road did recommend roadway improvements along the Hubbard Road frontage, although the applicant's proposal did not include that, which the recommendation by ACHD would actually be consistent with what Patagonia actually installed in the field. The other recommendation from the Planning and Zoning Commission was that they work together with staff and with the adjacent property owner, which is Greg Johnson and Patagonia, to come up with a pathway that connects to the very large pathway along the Mason Creek, which is actually outside of this project. And because there's a little bit of open space for this project, there's a need to connect those two spaces. The owner of both projects have gotten together, and they've actually agreed to provide a connection point to the Patagonia subdivision. And I'm just waiting for confirmation from Patagonia's owner, which is Greg Johnson from West Park. But staff does agree with what they proposed so that the residents of both subdivisions can enjoy the pathways of CUNA. The project does generally comply with Title VI City Code for subdivisions and Title V zoning regulations, and staff would also forward a recommendation of approval for the project. With that, staff would stand for any questions.
Okay, questions for Troy.
It appears, I could be missing it, but I'm looking at page 7 and 8 of 84. I don't see anything in there about the pathway that you were just referencing. Is it something that we need to add specifically?
That would be something specific to add. That took place during the public hearing at
Planning and Zoning.
Planning and Zoning, and then it basically ran its course and was memorialized, at least verbally, last week and forwarded to staff. So I do have a conceptual plan of how that will work if staff would like to see it, but staff was satisfied with what they proposed.
And I have flipped away from that section of my packet. Can you refresh my memory on what that adjoining sub is called or how we're referring to the pathway?
It's the Patagonia subdivision number one. Actually, I believe it's Patagonia subdivision number two that it will connect to.
Brianna, if you go to page 4 of 84, there's some information.
I know I'd seen it somewhere. I just couldn't remember where exactly it was.
I think
there's a paragraph there that addresses it. And then 6.8, I think, goes into a little more discussion.
Yes, I know I'd seen it somewhere. Thank you.
Okay, and Wendy, thank you for catching me getting ahead of myself once again. Now, we had a motion to close the public hearing and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. And the question is rightfully before council.
Okay. In reading through the packet, I agree with the comp plan analysis that has been included. I also note that the Planning and Zoning Commission did approve this, as Trevor mentioned. Troy, the Trevor substitute mentioned. Everything looks in order, so I move we approve case number 1711S with the note that all parties would continue to work on the Patagonia subpathway continuation, as well as the rest of the conditions of approval that are listed in the packet.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for approval. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? And that motion carries.
Just a minute. I think this crashed on me again.
Are you having technical difficulties again?
Yeah, I think it crashed. It's completely, I was flipping pages and it went completely. I was at about page 200 and then it crashed.
Okay, next item on the agenda is 6B. This is a public hearing and consideration to approve 17-10-S, preliminary plat for Grand Prado Subdivision, Troy Buchanan Planner 3. Again, this is a public hearing. We'll start out with 10 minutes for presentation and then allow 3 minutes of testimony and then 5 minutes for rebuttal after that from the applicant. So I have a few people that signed up. Is there anybody who didn't get a chance to sign in on this that wishes to do so? On the second page. Okay, and then we'll just go right to you.
My name is Kevin McCarthy. Address, I'm with KM Engineering. Address is 9233 West State Street in Boise. Today we've got before you the Grand Prado Subdivision, the preliminary plat. This is a property that's approximately 133 acres inside, and it's agricultural ground. It's located south of Amity and west of 10 Mile. Earlier in 2017, the project was annexed into CUNA with an R4 zone, and since that time we put together the preliminary plat you see before you and submitted that. We received a recommendation approval from preliminary plat from the CUNA Planning and Zoning Commission back in November. This project has gone through numerous layouts as we've worked through everything with the staff here at the City of CUNA and the County Highway District. Even after we made our original application, we had to make some additional changes at the request of ACHD. But we were able to do everything and still be fully compliant with the traffic impact study that was prepared. Despite the changes, we've kept the density at roughly 4 units per acre, so we have about 530 buildable lots. I'd like to highlight some of the open space and amenities in the project. There's about just over 13 acres of open space. We have plans for a pool and some changing rooms on one of the common lots. There's a master pathway along Mason Creek, which has been something consistent with this developer as he's developed in that area, maintaining that pathway. And there's also extensive sidewalk and pathway connectivity throughout the project. Access to the project will go to Amity and 10 Mile Road, and it's currently planned for about 11 phases. Again, I'd like to thank Troy and staff for working through all the various challenges with this site, as well as the County Highway District, and with that, I'll be happy to stand for any questions.
Okay. Questions for Mr. McCarthy? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Troy?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. For the record, Troy Buchanan, Planner 3, 751 West 4th Street, CUNA, CUNA Planning and Zoning Department. I think Kevin did a fine job on a comprehensive level explaining the details of the project. I'm not sure that another project's gone through as many iterations as this preliminary plat in order to satisfy all of the requirements of CUNA Planning and Zoning and the city code, ACHD, as well as the neighbors. The original layout of the preliminary plat has changed slightly, but that was in response directly to the ACHD report about the traffic impact analysis or the study, and also it included some of the changes on their policies. It turned some of the cul-de-sacs into through streets, and they addressed some other traffic issues. Council has questions, we can go more into that, but the layout, both of the original and the updated preliminary plat have actually been included in your packets. They weren't significant, and staff actually agreed with most of the requests from ACHD, and we feel like it does provide a safer environment and and it also does kind of address some of the concerns from the neighbors in Bitter Creek subdivision to the north and northeast of this project. The applicant is seeking approval for a preliminary plat for approximately 133 acres within the Cuban City limits, which was recently annexed into the city with an R4 zone. It does match the comprehensive plan. It does match the comprehensive plan map with the medium density designation. Grand Prado subdivision is located at the northwest corner of 10 Mile Lake Hazel Roads and has significant, it has frontage along 10 Mile Road, Amity, and also Amity Road. The 530 lots will all be buildable. It will also include 67 common lots for the homeowners and one shared driveway. Staff does support the one shared driveway as long as the applicant can provide and demonstrate a mechanism for continuous maintenance and upkeep for the shared driveway. And if they do that, then staff has very few concerns about that. Staff would like to point out that the city code does, in fact, call for vertical curb along all roadways, including 10 Mile and Amity Road, although it's not demonstrated in the plans, but it is a standard street section in the Cuban City code. Besides that, staff has found that during this application review that the original and the modified proposal does follow and meet or exceed all of the intent and purposes of the conditions that were placed upon this project or upon these lands when it was annexed in early 2017. The applicant will extend all of the public utilities to the site and anticipates a minimum of 10 phases for the project, which will bring the 530 lots. The density for this project is estimated at 4.0, which is spot on with the R4 density designation. It does include the 12.5 acres of open space with a number of trails and pathways connecting through the subdivision and to the canal on the south border of the project. And the applicant has also responded to, like I said, responded to some of the concerns about connectivity to the Bitter Creek subdivision, and that's why there's no street connection directly to that subdivision. It was in response to their concerns, and staff does support that. We've worked a very long time together with the applicant to get this before you tonight. They've submitted everything that we've asked for and requested, and Planning and Zoning Commission forwards a recommendation, and so does staff. And I would stand for any questions that you might have, and that's good.
Okay, questions for Troy.
So, thank you very much. Sorry, Jerry. Are we looking at two entry points onto 10 Mile and one entry point onto Amity? Is that what I'm seeing here?
That's exactly what you're seeing.
Okay.
Okay. Anything further for Troy?
There is a temporary, a third temporary on the south part of the 10 Mile. It'll just be temporary. As soon as there's connectivity for another phase, which provides a second point of entry, then it will actually be extinguished.
Okay. Will it have those cool barriers at the end that say this road is intended for future use?
I think in the future it's going to be a
rock pile. Or you have to put a rock pile there.
Right. We can put whatever you'd like, Mr. Mayor.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Troy. Again, this is a public hearing. Is there anyone who didn't get a chance to sign up to testify in this matter who wishes to do so? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and open the public hearing. We have several people that have signed up in favor. Linda Lake, if you would... Oh, you said no testify. Sorry. See, I have to pay attention. That's the problem with my job. Sometimes I have to pay attention. Timothy Eck, do you want to testify at this time? Or? Okay. Dan Cheney? Okay. Oh, Matt Christensen. Okay. All right, Matt, you may be up next. So that's a lot.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Matt Christensen, address 3649 North Lake Arbor Lane in Boise. I'm here representing the Bitter Creek Meadows Homeowners Association. Bitter Creek Meadows, if you'll recall, is the neighborhood just to the north of this proposed subdivision. There's 3 points that I want to make tonight. The first deals a little bit with the notice for the hearing. There's some of the homeowners who didn't receive notice until last week that the hearing was happening today, and they had some concern with that. The two more substantive comments that I have, if I don't know if it'll be easier if I can refer to the actual proposed plat. I'm not sure which page that is in your materials, but on the what I'm calling the main section of the plat there. On the drawings, there's a closer up view, which is sheet number PP2.0. It looks like that. The Bitter Creek Meadows has a sewer system that runs through a sewer pipe and an easement that goes through the proposed Grand Prado subdivision. There's a sewer pond to the far west end of the proposed development, which is depicted as a big white section there, right on the west end. The current sewer pipe runs essentially directly south of the Bitter Creek Meadows street, and then underneath what's depicted on the proposed plat is Pacina Drive, up until about halfway through the subdivision, where Pacina Drive flattens out. That's where the sewer pipe continues. The issue that we have is the sewer pipe continues all the way across to the top of my client's sewer pond. That's how the sewer effluent gets into the pond. The way the plat is currently depicted, that pipe will be directly under at least 5 or 6 of the proposed lots that are proposed to be built right over the top of that pipe. There's an easement that was also granted to my client for maintenance and to access that pipe to be able to maintain it, replace it, keep it active, and that sort of thing. That easement, obviously, would then be directly across some of those proposed lots as well. The previous owner of the proposed subdivision is the one who granted that easement. It's a perpetual easement. Previous owner of the proposed subdivision also acknowledged my client's ownership of that pipe at least 3 years prior to the current owner's purchase of that property. So that's our concern, is that those pipe rights and easement rights aren't being addressed and are essentially being ignored as the subdivision is built over the top of it. So we urge the council to deny the application. If there's any questions.
And did you review the packet that was sent out, everyone? Okay. I didn't know if you saw that. I didn't know if you knew you could access those or made public.
Yeah. I got where I printed these off.
Okay. All right. And then also you signed up in favor.
I signed up not in favor, I don't think.
And you're the in favor column. But I'm not nitpicking. I'm just making you aware. So.
Yeah.
No, not a problem. Okay, questions for Mr. Christensen? How about you? You get the same name.
I do have a question, actually. No relation. But I'm aware of. You talk about the piping and things that would be built underneath these residential homes. Would that eliminate the ability to do what your client is needing to do in case of repairs and situations like that? Is that what?
I don't know that it eliminates the ability to do that. As long as we can access the pipe, the homeowner buys the home knowing that we have an easement there and that we can dig through the floor of their house if we need to, that's up to them. But I think in practicality, yeah, it probably does limit our ability to maintain that pipe. There's a proposal that the current subdivision would simply connect up to Bitter Creek Meadows and provide sewer services through the current, through the proposed subdivision. That's not something that we've agreed to or that we're required to agree to. And I think that's what's been proposed, was to solve this, the problem of the pipe and the easement. But that we haven't accepted that.
Okay.
Mayor?
Yes.
Was this a perpetual easement that was issued to you?
Yes.
Okay. Has there been any discussion to move those pipes to where they'd be more accessible?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Further questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tom Dorvac.
Yes, sir. I'm here as an attorney representing the applicant, so I'll speak if necessary.
Okay. Well, that's all I had signed in, so Timothy Beck.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members. My name is Tim Eck. I'm the applicant. I live at 6152 West Half Moon Lane in Eagle, Idaho. As explained, we've worked extensively on this plat to get a very complicated series of out parcels, Indian Creek access, and the sewer main worked over. The unique layout of the interior roads is to follow the existing sewer main. Contrary to their comments, about 3 years prior to the litigation that was entered into between the Bitter Creek Meadows Homeowners Association and the City of Meridian over the City of Meridian's decision to eliminate a lift station that they were going to build to provide the conveyance of their sewer, I purchased the property. When I purchased the property, I purchased it including all appurtenances. A sewer pipe running through the ground is an appurtenance. Long before they were in litigation with anybody and talking to the prior owner about that pipe, I owned it. They do have an easement. The easement is for ingress and egress for this and for use of the sewer pipe. The easement is granted to the lagoon. The lagoon itself is the dominant estate. The easement does not provide access to and from the lagoon. Even provides access for the sewer main from the lagoon. Part of the settlement agreement that they entered into with the City of Meridian, with my cooperation and extensive work with the City of CUNA, was that when we got sewer main extended to them, we would connect them to the City of CUNA's sewer. Their settlement agreement with the City of Meridian anticipates that the City of Meridian is maintaining their current facilities until such time as that connection is achieved. We will achieve a gravity sewer main connection to them in phase four. When we build phase five, we will extend from that point out to our lift station that we will build. Phase four will all be gravity sewer. At the time we build phase four, they will be connected to the City of CUNA's wastewater treatment facilities. A lot of you have been aware of all the work that was done with the previous mayor to get all this accomplished without a mandatory requirement of annexation. And so when we build phase four, that sewer main comes offline. It's disconnected from them. They're connected to CUNA. It's my sewer main. It was deeded to me 7 years ago when I bought the property. We have to have the main inspected to find out if it is still serviceable. We did align the roads over the sewer main in the anticipation that it would meet all current inspection requirements of the City of CUNA and that we'd be able to use it. If it's determined to be unserviceable, we'll just go alongside it and leave it there. But it will no longer be connected. They'll no longer be connected to it. Unless they want to go into a breach of their agreement with the city of Meridian, they'll be connected to CUNA. Meridian's paying all their connection fees. Meridian is paying a reasonable cost sharing with us on the improvements that we'll do to get them connected to the city of CUNA sewer. So all the sewer issues go away when we build phase four. The easement will be for a pipe that's no longer in use. And like I said, we own the pipe. So I don't know. We'll be, if we can put it in use, the furthest west portion of it will change direction and go directly to the sewer plant. You can see the complexity of the plat, the layout, all of our open space, our pathways, our interconnectivity. We've worked relentlessly with the two out parcels, the Spaldings, the Andersons. Following this hearing, we look forward to a property boundary adjustment and the splits on their properties, you know, to get them what they wanted. And I'll stand for any questions right now.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Rett.
What is your time frame for phase four? Like, when do you expect that to possibly be? I know you can't predict because of lots
roughly,
selling and whatnot.
Roughly, we hope to do a phase a year.
Okay.
And, you know, one thing that needs to be taken into consideration, that wastewater lagoon was a temporary facility. The developer entered into agreement with the city of Meridian that it would come offline as soon as Meridian built the lift station, which was anticipated to occur in about 3 years. Then the economy changed.
Right.
Then the city didn't want the lift station. Then we're 10 years into a facility that was put in to last for 3 years. I don't know what the lifestyle of that rubber membrane is, but it's not lifetime. And so approximately 5 years, we should have them connected. In 6 years, we'll have our lift station built, which is beyond the extent of that sewer rate.
Okay.
Okay. Further questions for Mr. Eck?
Yeah, as our development progression moves from one end of the project, it moves in a path from our sewer connection to Bitter Creek. So literally getting them connected as quickly as we can. And phase five would be the first phase over the existing sewer main. And I'm not sure if the portion of phase of the plat that they're talking about, the sewer main, goes under lots. If that's even in phase five, it might be in phase six or a later phase. But before we get to any construction over the sewer main, they'll be connected.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Eck, the homeowners have an easement to a pipe they don't own then.
That's correct.
And that's what you're saying.
That's correct. They have an easement to run sewer through the pipe and an easement across the pipe for the purpose of maintenance and repair if necessary.
But no ownership in the pipe whatsoever?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Eck. Thank you, Pierre.
Okay. Any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
And then, Mr. Dorek, was there anything you wished to...
Only to make this point, which is... If there's some issue about it.
You're Mr. Dvorak?
I am Mr. Dvorak.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting this all backwards, aren't I? Tim's attorney? Are you Tim's attorney?
I am Tim's attorney.
Okay. All right. I'm with you now.
Name
I'm caught up.
You're right.
All right. I'm caught up.
What's that old thing about a broken clock? Oh, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
That's right. Twice a day. No. The only point I wanted to add was in terms of the legality of who owns the pipe, certainly there's remedies, and this is something we put before the P&Z Commission, too. There certainly are remedies in terms of going to court if that really becomes an issue. But I don't think that the approval of the subdivision is the appropriate place to sort that out, especially in light of what Mr. Eck has put forth in terms of his consideration, in terms of the fact that he's not going to build on the area where the pipe is. So from the perspective of approving the plat at this point, it should really be a non-issue. Thank you.
Thank you.
I stand for any questions.
Any questions? All right. Thank you very much. All right, I confused myself on that one. Did I get everybody up there that was signed in? I believe I did. Okay. All right, thank you. Well, that's all we have for... is there any reason to keep the public hearing open? If not, we'll... Okay.
If there's nobody else wishing to testify, I move we close the public hearing.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to close the public hearing. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Mayor, I have one question. Mr. Rick, am I to understand that Ada counties require you to put a signal on Amity and 10 Mile, and they're looking at making that a roundabout in the very near future? Did I read that correctly?
Yes. There are two options for the improvement of the traffic counts at Amity and 3rd Mile. A temporary signalization is one option. A temporary signalization is just throwing money away. It is in their 5-year work plan. Therefore, if we do the permanent installation, it is impact fee eligible. So our current plan is that we will construct the roundabout. So okay. It will be the permanent installation. ACHD, I believe they completed the engineering last year. In this fiscal year, between now and October, I believe they are acquiring all of the right-of-way. And so after October or in the next year, we will build the roundabout.
Okay.
We have to provide security for the first $1 million to accomplish that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Rick.
Thank you. All right. We're good for a vote now?
Yes.
Okay. All those in favor of closing public hearing testimony, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? That motion carries. And the question is rightfully before council.
Personally, Mayor, it looks like a very nice subdivision with a lot of flexibility in it. So, I personally see nothing wrong with it. So, if the pipe's not an issue, that would have repercussions back to us for okay in it. And I guess that's a question that our city attorney should address.
Council Member Cardoza, Mayor, that's correct. As Mr. Dvorak said, that would be an issue that would be litigated between the HOA and Mr. Eck. It's not to concern this city council in its decision.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anything further?
I tend to agree. It looks like it's in substantial compliance with our comp plan, including some specific things, having some nice green spaces, improving our trail connectivity, which I know we're always eager to do. I also note that Planning and Zoning Committee signed off on that, and I always do appreciate getting their input and approval. I'm satisfied with the presentation, and so I don't want to cut off any further discussion if there is any.
Nope.
But so I will then go ahead and just state that based on the findings of fact and conclusions of law that are listed in the packet and the testimony that's been heard here tonight, I vote to, or I move we approve case number 1710S with the conditions of approval as outlined in the report.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve 17-10-S. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. 7A, informational only, is the financial results of operations year to date through December 31, 2017. John Marsh.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. For the record, John Marsh. As I had mentioned in the memo, I
I do not plan on, I had not planned on introducing any information under the premise that you had all had a chance to look at the information and formulate any questions. So in summary, I'll just say that everything is progressing as planned from a financial standpoint. There are no concerns. There's nothing for me to point out that's a red flag. As of right now, we're 25% of the way through the year, and everything looks on par. Any questions?
Thank you. Question for John?
Thanks. I just said thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
I like the trend lines, by the way. I haven't noticed those before, so. Way to go.
Good, that's good. Thank you. 7B, consideration to approve 17-03-LS. This is a lot split. And 17-04-LLA, lot line adjustment for Spaldings. Troy?
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Just for the record, Troy Buchanan, Planning and Zoning Department, Unit, Idaho, 751 West 4th Street. The applications are pretty straightforward. This lot line adjustment involves two cooperating property owners. Mr. Eck and the Spaldings have been working together for well over 18 months in order to get things to where both parties benefit. And you'll notice that in the before and after, or the current and the proposed shots of the Spaldings lot, it has been rearranged slightly, and they are also proposing a lot split. Staff has determined that the information that we've been given, that it is an original parcel, now that it's in the city of Cuna, that it does qualify for a lot split. So basically, we have two cooperating landowners who would like to manipulate one lot and then split the result of that lot afterwards. The lot line adjustment does form fit the Grand Prado subdivision, which completely surrounds this property. It will provide complete improvements, including the street and the sewer and the water will be available for the future. But that will take place probably in phase four, maybe phase five. So we're talking, it's 4 or 5 years from when the project actually begins, which the project has about 7 or 8 months before it begins. With the resulting lot split, the lot on the south, which would be the new parcel, they're seeking a septic system because they would like to enjoy the benefits of their lot split sooner than phase four or five of Grand Prado subdivision. So when the street actually does come by in phase four or five, then what will happen is the current septic system that the property now uses, it's either too close to the right-of-way or it will be under the proposed new road and will have to be removed, and that house will then be connected to city water and sewer at that time at the expense of Tim Eck and his development team. The new septic system that they're proposing, they would actually like to use that one until failure. Staff normally discourages septic tanks. However, in this case, there are extenuating circumstances that prevent connection to city sewer and water. It's more than 300 feet. Right now, it's currently somewhere in about 1,400 feet from a point of connection, so it's an extreme distance. Staff would like to recommend that a memorandum of understanding, an MOU, if you will, between us and the landowner for the lot split, which we anticipate is going to be a family member of the Spaldings, that they just enter into an agreement that at the time of failure or at a time of their choosing prior to failure that they do connect to sewer and water at their own expense, whoever the landowner is. But other than that, that's as sticky as this one gets, and staff would stand for any questions you might have.
Questions for Troy. How long ago was this one annexed into the city?
This was annexed in with Renaissance Farms. I believe the findings of fact were signed last March.
Okay. All right.
2017.
Thank you. I'm just curious.
Okay. Sorry, just in double reviewing the conditions of approval, I don't see that that is listed, what you just talked about, the sewer system. Yeah, yeah. Am I correct or am I missing it?
You are correct.
Okay.
But it could be added.
Right, right. I just want to make sure it wasn't overlooked.
Really, it's just it was an oversight. Really, it's just to ensure that there's motivation that at the time of failure that they do connect. Because that was the request. That may last 5 years, might last 10 years. I did fail to mention that Paul Stevens and Bob Ockman, I had a conversation with Paul today about it, and he feels like staff does. You know, we don't encourage septic systems. However, due to the circumstances, I think we all agree that that's an extreme distance to pull sewer water from one house.
Sorry, Jerry, quick question, because I heard a couple of different things and I just wanted to clarify. When it comes to phase four and the sewage connection, that's completely separate than what you're talking about when it comes to the septic.
For the new proposed septic, yes.
For the it would new be proposed. Okay.
The disconnection from a septic system and connection to the city water and sewer at phase four, that is for the current system for the house that's already there. That would be the northern parcel.
Okay. And when replacement occurs, all expenses paid by the owner at that time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, for that one.
For
and
that
then
one.
For the new one, at failure, then connection to the city system is on the landowner.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything further?
Mm-mm. Okay. I appreciate that a lot of effort has gone into this by all parties, so I don't see any issues with it. I therefore move that we approve case number 1703LS and 1704LLA with the conditions of approval listed and the addition of one condition of approval. That would be the addition of an MOU with the owner and the city regarding the septic system and connection to the city sewer at a future date.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded for approval of 17-03-LS and 17-04-LLA. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. 7C, consideration to approve 17-05-LS lot split and 1704LLA lot line adjustment for Anderson. Troy.
Again, thank you, Mr. Mayor. For the record, Troy Buchanan, Kino Planning is on Department Planner 3. This is nearly an identical situation, except for there's not a request for a septic system. However, the lot line adjustment really is to clear up some bad record of survey work from years past, but when it comes down to it, it's an effort by both two cooperating landowners to reconfigure a lot, and then staff has also determined that this is also an original parcel and does qualify for a lot split. Probably in phase five, all of the improvements will come near, and then connection to the city sewer and water at that time will be required. For the new parcel. The old parcel can enjoy the septic system as it is.
Okay. Questions for Troy? Mm-mm. Thank you. Looks like the same deal, only just moving lines a little bit and splitting off a lot. So not even as complicated as the last one.
Yes, I understand a lot of effort's gone into this, so I thank everybody for their work on this. I just want to make sure my numbers are correct here, because I think they were the ones from the last. Sorry, hang on just a second. Yeah, they are. Is that correct or not?
Which one?
That the, I'm this? Just checking if the numbers are the same because they are in the packet.
Okay.
They are, yes? Is that correct, Troy? That the numbers are the same for the lots? It is because they have the same like documents within. Is that accurate?
You do have 1704 LLA on both of those.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fine. That's the distributor's error then. Sorry. So the correct numbers for this application are 1705 LS and 1704 LLA. The one before was 1703 LLA.
So we're going to need to go back and...
Okay.
Consecutive numbers, different applications. I apologize. So the Spaldings is 1703 LLA and 1704 LS. And the Andersons is 1704 LLA and 1705 LS.
Got it. I think I'm good.
I imagine you'll be hearing from the clerk's office first thing in the morning.
Why wait till the morning? Bring it on.
In fact, there's a little chart in there that's going to have a little frowny face on it, I think.
Okay, so with regard to the applications which are currently before us, I move we approve case number 1705 LS and 1704 LLA with the conditions of approval as listed.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve 1705 LS and 1704 LLA with the conditions. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Richard, what is proper procedure for going back and fixing the hiccup?
Mayor, excuse me. Why don't we go back and move to reopen to correct the case numbers on that and a vote and then the correct case numbers for that vote?
Okay.
Thank you.
So moving back to item 7B, we'll reopen this to correct the lot line adjustment numbers. The lot split number is correct already, so we just need to have a motion to change those numbers.
Apologies. What, again, is the correct lot line adjustment number?
1703.
Okay,
LLA.
We've passed 1704 twice. The first one we passed was 03 and then 04, and then the second one was 05 and 04. No. The first one is 03 and 04. Yeah, it's 03 and 03. And then the other one's 04 and 05, right?
No.
05 and 04, rather.
So the case numbers for the Spaulding, which was the first one, mm-hmm. the lot line adjustment was 1703.
Correct.
Okay. The lot split was 1704. Okay, so that's correct.
So we're not correct on that one either.
Not correct.
We were correct on that one. We're not correct on the second one that we just passed then, even though we tried.
Okay. Right? Let's go through these one at a time. So we're going to item 7B, 1703 lot split. Is that correct?
For the Spauldings?
Correct.
That is not correct. 1703 lot line adjustment.
What is the lot split?
1704.
17-04. And then the lot line adjustment is?
For the Andersons?
For the Spauldings.
Oh, for the Spauldings. Lot line adjustment is 1703.
So we had both numbers
wrong.
So
both of those numbers
one.
Were wrong.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, and then on the next one, on Anderson.
For Anderson, 1704-LLA. So lot line adjustment is the 04.
Okay.
And then the lot split is 17-05 LS.
Yeah, so okay. We did that one correctly.
Okay.
Yes. The first one had the wrong numbers.
Yes.
Troy, you're allowed one mistake a year, and it's so early in the year. Walk gently.
Okay, so 7B is right.
All right, so we're operating, we're going to back up and go to 7B and change the numbers to 17-04-LS and 17-03-LLA.
So do I need to remove?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I rescind my prior motion, and I now move that we approve case number 17-04-LS and 17-03-LLA with the conditions of approval as listed and with the addition of a condition requiring an MOU with the owner and the city regarding the septic and connection to the city sewer for one of the new lots to be created.
Second. Okay. Motion's made and seconded to approve 17-04 lot split and 17-03 lot line adjustment. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. All right, good. We can go to 7D now. Consideration to reappoint Lee Young, Dana Hannes, and Kathy Gailey to the Planning and Zoning Commission for a period of 3 years, which will expire on January 2021. Wendy Howell.
I strongly recommend that you reappoint these individuals. They are awesome commissioners. They do the research. They read the packets. They're very eager to continue serving the community.
All right.
How about are any of the other commissioners any good?
Well, one in.
One's busy interrupting everything here.
Thank you.
I'll just note that I sure appreciate the continuing interest in serving. It's always really important that we have folks who understand what the duties of a planning and zoning commissioner are and the rules and everything. So I'm happy that all three of them are interested in continuing to serve. With that being said, I move we... Can tell I'm not the right part. I move we reappoint Lee Young, Dana Hennis, and Kathy Gailey to the Planning and Zoning Commission for a period of 3 years with terms expiring in January 2021.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to reappoint Lee Young, Dana Hennis, and Kathy Gailey to the Planning and Zoning Commission for a period of 3 years with an expiration of January 2021. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. And extend our thanks to all of the people on planning and zoning for your tireless efforts and
thankless efforts, and
for the,
I fear.
For the high pay that you receive, or yeah. No pay. Item 8A, consideration to approve ordinance number 2018-01. That means it's the first one. An ordinance annexing certain real properties into the city of Cuna, Idaho, to wit Danskin Ridge subdivision number 2, all of lots 12 through 31, excepting out 26. Danskin Ridge subdivision number 3, all of lots 32 through 49. And Danskin Ridge subdivision, is that subdivision, I would assume? Number 5, all of lots 55 through 67. All properties situated in the unincorporated area of Ada County, Idaho, and contiguous to the corporate limits of the city of Cuna, into the city of Cuna, Idaho, establishing the zoning classification of said real properties, directing that copies of this ordinance be filed as provided by law, and providing an effective date. This is something that I don't feel like we need to do all three readings. I think we can fast-track this one if council desires.
Agreed. We're basically just affecting what we did last meeting. So I move we waive three readings of Ordinance 2018-01.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to waive the three readings of Ordinance Number 2018-01. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve Ordinance 2018-01.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve Ordinance 2018-01. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
I move we approve summary publication of Ordinance 2018-01.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve summary publication of Ordinance Number 2018-01. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Mayor Council announcements. Is there anything that Council wishes to speak on, announce, or otherwise?
I don't think so.
Good. Wore out for the evening? We did have a kind of a town hall meeting the other night, the chief and I, with some residents. This kind of came up from some comments on Facebook and people being concerned about the way things are going. And I think that went really well. I think a lot of it is perception now that it's so easy to report things that happen that we hear about them more often. I don't know if you want to go over anything about that. I mean, it kind of looked like our crime rate really hasn't increased substantially or anything. So.
That's correct, Mayor.
See, I made you get up. I'm sorry.
For the record, John McDaniel, Chief of Police. Mr. Mayor, members of council, at our meeting, we had a great meeting. It was about 2 hours and 40 minutes long. I think we had about 38 residents show up, and so it was great to see that kind of turnout. And our agenda items were really about volunteering and just, you know, being more involved in the community and us, all of us in the community, being able to work together just to make it a safer town. So it was great to see that kind of commitment. And as far as the meeting goes, there was some perception, I think, on the CUNA must know that there was a spike in crime, and the next council meeting I will be reporting on with our data there. Our funding research department is working on something that's more friendly for our screens, but there is no spike, and I was glad to hear that. And so I think part of that message was just letting them know what's, you know, really going on versus perception sometimes. We also, I think the main message, and we reiterated it several times, was just to, we really need the community to let us know even the smallest thing. You know, and I think that's the same, you know, no matter where we're speaking, that is a constant message of ours. But it sounds like we may even get a couple volunteers out of this that can work in our police department with us, with all the different activities we have going. So I think some good things came from the meeting. Stand for any questions.
No, I just appreciate you making yourself available.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that kind of came up, and I contacted Chief, and there were some people that wanted to present to council with some type of a plan, so I thought it best if we looked at what the actual situation was before we tried to come up with a plan. So Chief was very respondent to that, and in fact, that happened much quicker than I thought they'd be able to make it happen, so we were able to do that within just a couple of days, and we did have a good turnout, so I was very happy about that, but that went really well, so that's about all I can think of right off the top of my head that is of any pertinence. All right, if that's it, meeting adjourned. Thank you all very much.